Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
However, let's go to the fan hotline and welcome in Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, at Mary Kay Cabot on X, formerly Twitter. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Is Sunday make or break for Shador Sanders?
No, not at all. I really do not believe that. I think it's a great, great opportunity for him to go out there and build on what he did versus the Ravens and have an opportunity to maybe get another start after that. But I don't think it's make or break by any stretch of the imagination.
So if he goes out there and he doesn't play very well or the offense struggles, like they've been, say he has a Dylan Gabriel game. Dylan Gabriel hasn't been very great. Does he get the start next week against San Francisco?
It depends on a couple of things. First of all, has Dylan Gabriel been cleared from the concussion protocol? Once that happens, then the Browns have to decide, is it time to go back to Dylan and let him finish what he started? And I know they wanted to see him for a few more games. Or is it time to see if Shador can build again on what he did? And if he has a Dylan-like game and improves on the Ravens game, then I personally think that he would deserve to keep that going a little bit and start another game or another couple of games and let him have his string. I don't think that means that you can't go back to Dylan at some point, because I still think that you need to see some things from him, especially with Tommy Rees calling the plays.
Mary Kay, I gotta be honest, I think I'm finished with what Dylan started. I don't really need to see a lot more of that. You're right, though. If Shador plays similar to Dylan, what is the point of going back to Dylan now? We've seen, you know, how many games at Dylan. Let's get some games on the resume for Shador at this point.
Well, there are still 7 games left, and the reason why I would not be opposed to going back and seeing more of Dylan Gabriel is because people are way too quick to write off rookie quarterbacks. It takes time, it takes development, and it also takes a supporting cast. And if you're having offensive line problems, which the Browns have had, if you're having receiver problems, which the Browns have had, it's very hard for a young rookie quarterback to go in there and solve all of the problems of an offense by himself, or not by himself, but without the supporting cast or the help that he needs. So I think people are way too quick to do that. I think Dylan was coming up the learning curve and doing some better things, and I wouldn't be opposed to seeing more of him, because I like some of the things that he was doing with Tommy calling those plays. Having said that, I do think that you need to play it out with Shador a little bit. If he has some momentum and he is flourishing in Tommy's scheme that they're going to devise for him this weekend, then I would give him a chance to build some continuity and some confidence and keep it going for a while.
What was up with Jerry Jeudy yesterday?
You know, it's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that question, but I like to give a player the benefit of the doubt, and until I know why he does something out of character, then I don't think that it's – I don't appreciate or I don't think it's right for people to bury a player when we don't know what the issue is. And we have no idea why he went up there and didn't feel like talking. I will say this, though. The reporters and the team and everyone, if you don't feel like talking that day at the podium and you don't have it for whatever reason and you want to switch to another day, nobody would fault a player for that. If you just have something going on, you know, in your mind or your life or in your schedule, and you just don't want to be up there in that moment, and you're not going to be able to answer questions, it's perfectly fine to say, hey, you know what, let me switch with someone, I'll go up there tomorrow.
Well, I had said to Lyman even said back, it's like, well, you know, I don't know if he got pulled over on the way to the facility or something like that, and he was upset about that. It's like, you could speak on another day, but now that he's spoken, it's like, man, this is, you need some positivity as you get ready for with this rookie quarterback. There's a lot of things that I think are stacked against them as a football team and their offense and the Shador in general. It's like, man, you're the number one wide receiver. We need some positivity out of you to get going with this, because I already don't have a great feeling, and I can't help but when I saw that audio yesterday, when I saw you guys talking to him, I felt a bit worse.
Well, I'm sure that Jerry Jeudy didn't step up there and think, oh, geez, I think I'm going to ruin Shador's big moment here. He must have had something going on. Jerry is really great about getting up there. You know, many guys don't even talk to us during the week, but Jerry's really good after games. I think there was only one game this year where he was kind of upset and didn't talk, but for the most part, he's really good after games. He's a great quote. He's accommodating. He's approachable. And so, like I said, I like to give a player the benefit of the doubt. And until I know why he did something like that, then I'm not going to pass judgment on it, because I really highly doubt that Jerry was trying to ruin Shador's big day.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us right now on the hotline. One of the storylines I'm fascinated with this week is how Tommy Rees and Kevin Stefanski operate this offense with Shador, because there's like a risk reward to me, a debate that could be had. Like, Dylan, we know what the offense kind of looked like. He wasn't making a ton of the really bad mistakes that can truly kill you. While Shador, he might make those mistakes, but will they allow him to if it means they can stretch the field, go vertical, and maybe incorporate some new dynamics into the offense?
Well, the thing with Shador Sanders is that he is going to need a tweaked or a different game plan than what Dylan had. He's not as mobile as Dylan. And while you can roll him out and run the boots and stuff like that, you're not going to have as much quarterback movement in the game plan. As you mentioned, you might have some more deeper shots in the game plan, but you also have to have time to throw those. And the Raiders, even though they don't have a great defense, they do some things well. They're going to blitz him, and they also stop the run pretty well. They're second in the NFL in average yards allowed in the running game. So, that can make it difficult to get your passing game going. So I do think that you're going to see perhaps maybe a little bit of a pared down playbook. I don't think he's going to have as much at his disposal as Dylan did, because as we have been told since day one, Shador has been coming up the learning curve. He had further to go in terms of running a pro style offense. And now we know, and I think it's so interesting, that Kevin spends a lot of time with him one-on-one in his office, going over his tape from the day before, talking defenses, talking, you know, just how he saw things and whatnot. And for all the people that think the Browns are sabotaging Shador Sanders, which has always been a preposterous notion, they have spent so much extra time with this young man, and they've altered their entire practice schedule during the week to make sure that he is being developed thoughtfully, deliberately, and adequately. So he's coming up that learning curve, but he's not there yet. And so they're going to have to dial it back a little bit for him, but they will give him plenty of things to do that he feels really comfortable with.
Well, that is great that you said that, Mary Kay, because I feel like, especially the national media.
Lima says Cam Newton deserves to, or has to.
Well, I think
give
he should apologize.
An apology to Kevin.
I mean, he was operating with the under the assumption that Kevin doesn't like him, doesn't work with him, that he's a complete afterthought. And you're in the building. The only thing I wish Kevin would have been a little more forthright about all that stuff, just so that people would not speculate things like that. I mean, they're analyzing his face on draft night and the body language, you know, over on the sidelines. Like, Kevin could have avoided all of that had he had just been a little more specific about the plan for Shador this year.
Well, I mean, I think he has tried to say, hey, you know, we're bringing him along and we're doing all those things. He just hasn't been super specific about it. And the only reason that we know that Shador is going in there early mornings and he's in Kevin's office with him is because Myles Garrett revealed that. And so I did follow up and ask Kevin about it yesterday. And then he was willing to say that, yes, that does happen. But he's not one to pat himself on the back. And that's just not who he is. And he's going to give us the bare minimum amount of information. And the good thing that happens out there in Berea is the fact that his coordinators and his assistants are excellent quotes. And I'm sure you guys hear that and you see that. We'll have Tommy today. Tommy will give us all kinds of stuff. All of those guys do. So they kind of make up for the non-answers that we get from Kevin. But I think he has been trying to say, look, we're bringing him along at a certain pace, and we are sticking to our plan.
So how do you think Sunday's going to go for him?
You know, I think it's going to go well in some spots, and I think there will be some mistakes. My whole thing with Shador for this Sunday is that I think he's going to have to play within himself and not try to be legendary in this game, not try to do too much and prove to the world that he should have been taken in the first round or that he should be the Browns' starting quarterback for the next 100 years. He's got to try to just manage the game to the best of his ability and not try to go nuts out there, because that's when he's going to run into problems. That's when he's going to press. That's when he's going to retreat and revert to some bad behaviors. So they have to find a number of things that he can do well and feel good about. And even if that involves getting some of his hungry dog guys a little bit more involved, so be it. You know, he's got to feel confident in what he's doing. I think he'll find completions because he throws a beautiful ball. I've been telling you guys that since day one. The thing that I always see from him is ball placement. It's uncanny for a rookie. He can just, you know, lightly lift it over the head of a linebacker. I mean, he can vary the ball speed, the arm angles, and he can place it where he wants it to go in a way that the receiver can catch it pretty easily. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. That takes a long time usually to learn in the NFL, and he brings that naturally. And I think that, therefore, when he gets down into the red zone and the end zone, that he should be able to throw some touchdown passes.
What do you think it'll be like, Mary Kay, if Myles Garrett sets the sack record this season on one of the worst teams in football?
I think he is going to set that sack record, absolutely 100%. There's almost no doubt in my mind that he's going to set that sack record. And I think the Browns will probably help see to it that he does. And there are certain ways that you can go about moving him around and making sure that he has favorable matchups. So that's one great thing that they're going to be able to take out of this season. And I think he should also win NFL Defensive Player of the Year, even though they're in a losing season. I don't think they should take that away from him and penalize him, because it's actually harder to get these sacks when they're playing from behind a lot and when they're not cooking out there in the third and fourth quarter. So I think it's been a tremendous season, the best I've ever seen from him. I've always thought that there was more in the tank for Myles Garrett, and that he was leaving a little bit of meat on the bone out there each season, just because you see the incredible physical talent. And I think this year he's leaving it all out there.
So I have to do some weird housekeeping with you. What is the situation with Deshaun? What do they have to do? Do they have to open up a window? When? What is it? They didn't open it up this week, the practice window. What's going on there?
Okay, so just to clarify this, they do not have any kind of a deadline for opening up the 21-day practice window, designating him for return from reserve PUP. They don't have any deadline for that. They can do that, you know, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now. My feeling right now is that in a perfect world, they would probably wait until the off season to put him out on the practice field and be careful with the fact that this is a revision of an Achilles, and there really probably isn't a great reason to try to throw him into the football, into a football game on only 3 weeks of practice when he's been out for so incredibly long. So I think they would probably like to bring him back slowly in OTAs and mini camp and not rush him into anything this year. Now, having said that, there might be a world in which they decide, let's open up the window, throw him out on the practice field and see what he can do. And I know he would love that. He would absolutely love that. He feels ready to go. But I think that they're going to be very, very careful with him. And he will be on the team next year. He will definitely be on the team next year.
He's not going to get cut over the summer?
No. Nope. He will be here. There are too many cap considerations for him to get cut or anything like that. He will be around.
All right. Mary Kay, we thank you very much for the time. All the very best to you and yours.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. Is that bad news?
I think she's just giving you, because of the contract, a dose of the reality that maybe we've tried to avoid all year. Because for us, it's been out of sight, out of mind.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Brian Hoyer joins us on behalf of DraftKings Sportsbook. Fans can visit DraftKings all season long for the latest NFL odds and promotions, like a touchdown parlay boost this Sunday for all customers.
That means Brian Hoyer is joining us, and he's joining us right now. He's on the fan hotline. Brian, Jeff Phelps here, Andy Baskin there. Great to have you with us.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good to be with you. I was on with your morning counterparts yesterday, so I'm excited to catch up with you guys today on behalf of DraftKings and just further enhancing fan engagement around the league. And I know the Browns season hasn't gone how people may have hoped, but with Shador possibly getting his first start, fans can still visit DraftKings and create some excitement and fun around his first start. I'm sure there'll be a lot of wagers this weekend.
I'm sure you're absolutely right about that, because it's... intriguing is the word that I've used too often, Brian. The whole situation here, and you know it well, is intriguing, yeah, to say the least. What have you seen from either one of these rookie quarterbacks, and obviously such a small look at Shador, that has made you think, yep, and has made you think, nope?
Well, look, I think first and foremost, we need to address, you know, people are like, Shador is a lightning rod for anything that is going to involve him. And there's a big thing, you know, I just want to say this. It's not easy on any quarterback, veteran, rookie, to come in cold off the bench in a division rivalry game, cold at the second half of the game, and come out and play well, even if you had gotten a few reps. And I think the reps thing has kind of been blown out of proportion. I'm actually kind of shocked people don't understand how reps work in the NFL, and it varies from organization to organization, situation to situation. But my guess is when you have a starting quarterback who's a rookie in Dylan Gabriel, he's going to get every single rep. It was the same way here in New England when Mac Jones was a rookie quarterback. I didn't get any reps in practice because those guys are seeing things for the first time that they're going to have to execute on Sunday. So I think everybody just needs to take a pause and say, look, we're going to get to see Shador with a full repertoire of practices under his belt, a game plan that is modeled after him this week. And so I wouldn't put too much judgment into what happened this past Sunday. Now, the one thing I would say is where Shador seemed to get in trouble was relying on some of the things that we saw going into the draft that he would do as far as moving out of the back of the pocket. And in college, he was athletic enough to do so. But when you have guys, and I understand Myles Garrett is on the same team as Shador, but when you have guys like Myles Garrett who are going to chase you down out of the back of the pocket, unless you're Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen or even what Drake May has been able to do this year, you want to push up into the pocket. And I think, you know, you saw that on the deep in cut that he hit across the middle. And I think with a week of practice under his belt, the coaches have to be emphasizing, Shador, you've got to step up. We'll protect you. Those tackles are going to run those edge guys by. Max Crosby's on the edge. You do not want to go out of the back of the pocket with Max Crosby breathing down your neck because it's not going to be a good play. So the one thing I would say is the game is not going to be too big for Shador. Like, this is not a situation where a guy's going to go in and be overwhelmed by being a quarterback in the NFL. He grew up around it. He's been influenced heavily by his father, who was one of the greatest players of all time. This is almost second hand to him. It's playing football. It's just now you have to take it up a notch because the guys you're playing against are on a whole nother level.
Brian, I just want to go back to that rep thing real quick. But isn't it unique here that you had two rookie quarterbacks in that situation?
Of course.
Like, if it was you, like I would feel confident if I had a young quarterback and you were my backup, because you know how to go out on the field and you know what it takes to execute. When you have a guy that had zero snaps, like that's why I just think this, like, I understand why people are getting a little upset, just because this situation's so much more unique than, I mean, look at the AFC. There's no tandem where you've got rookie quarterbacks, two rookie quarterbacks together. In fact, I think Indy was the only place where you were looking at a rookie even in that situation. So, I mean, it's unique to that. So maybe that is a justifiable reason to say, hey, you know what, maybe we should get this backup quarterback some reps.
No, I don't disagree. I mean, I can't think of many other situations where the quarterback depth chart is two rookies. I mean, that's shame on the Browns for putting themselves in that situation. I mean, look, you had Kenny Pickett in the offseason. You traded him away. You had Flacco. You started him. It wasn't going well. You traded him away. You're throwing your rookies to the wolves, so to speak. And the only thing I would say is this. How many reps are you going to give them? Two a period? Like, at NFL practice, there might be three team periods with 10 to 12 plays each, and you can't extend those periods to make the other guys practice more. And so even if you gave Shador two reps per period, do you really think it's going to make that big of a difference? It's not. I promise you it's not. And so I don't disagree with you, and shame on the Browns for putting themselves in that situation. This is not anyone else to blame other than whoever decided to make that choice and say, we're going to draft two rookies and then we're going to abandon them from all the veterans in the room.
Brian Hoyer joining us. Brian, if a quarterback is not taken in the first round, his chances of starting in the NFL are slim. All you got to do is look at who starts right now. Second round picks, that's really tough. You overcame huge odds to have a long NFL career. What kind of odds are these two guys facing now as third and fifth round picks? And let's start with Dylan. What have you seen that makes you think, yes, this guy might be something in the NFL or no?
Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, look, this is going to sound bad, but their odds are not great as long as they're on the Browns organization. And that history would tell you that, right? I mean, there's not that jersey that hangs with all those names on it for no reason. But look at what Baker's been able to do. And I think the one thing that you hit on it, when you're a first-round quarterback, you are going to get more chances. The further down the line you go, the chances become smaller and smaller because people will always say, well, that's why he wasn't a first-rounder, right? But with Baker, I mean, I love the story for Baker because it's a guy who was cast off, you know, I love the picture of him and Sam Darnold together in Carolina. And I'm thinking to myself, you guys had two of the top 10 quarterbacks on the same team and couldn't make it work. And now they're out there playing well for other organizations. And to me, it's a lot about the situation, right? It's going to the right situation, having the right coaches around you, the right players around you, the right ownership and support staff around you. And there's so much that goes in. It's not always on the quarterback. And I would say, you know, the one thing you've seen with Gabriel is it's just hard for him to see over the offensive line. I'm just trying to be honest about it. I watched him in person here against the Patriots, and it's tough. And the ball just dies on him. The further it leaves from the line of scrimmage, the ball dies. And he threw that interception. Jalen Hawkins made an incredible interception, but the ball just dies on him. And the one thing you would say about Shador, I think, and with him probably getting reps and starting this week, you'll see he has the ability to push the ball down the field a little bit more. And so, you know, I'm not saying they don't have a chance. I think anybody who is on an NFL roster is more than capable in the right situation of being a starting quarterback. As you mentioned, I was undrafted, was a starting quarterback on three different organizations on opening day. It's about going out there, improving, learning from the right people, and then when you get your opportunity, executing. And so that's why I say, like, with this week coming up, you know, the Raiders defense hasn't been great. You're going to have to just make sure you handle Max Crosby. I think the one thing that they could do to really help Shador is get a run game going with Judkins and take some of the pressure off, get him some easy completions, get him in a rhythm. And the biggest thing they have to emphasize all week is you got to push up in the pocket and make those decisions. You can't run out of the back of the pocket. Those guys will chase you down in a heartbeat.
Brian, you know, we looked at a team you know pretty well, New England Patriots. You look at them a year ago and you're like, oh, look at this. Well, maybe the Patriots aren't. And now all of a sudden, you bring Vrabel in there, and Drake May's playing great. Like, how did they do it so fast?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of Ohio natives are over here helping this guy out. You mentioned Vrabel, who was actually, you know, as you guys all know, was there in the Cleveland building last year. And Josh McDaniels, you know, down from Cam McKinley, the Bulldog, and how fortunate they were to be able to bring him back and pair him with Drake May. And there were flashes, you know. Drake May, you know, came in last year and people would say he had the most upside in the draft. And I would agree, you know, 6'4", 230, can throw, can run. And what Vrabel's been able to do here, and I think it's, you know, this is a special place to Mike. He played here, won Super Bowls here. He's well-respected, and he's established a culture that the players have just bought into. And when you pair that with a talented young quarterback who's playing out of his mind, I mean, I knew that he would have a chance to be good once they hired Josh and with the things that I'd seen him do, but he's played above and beyond and faster, has met those expectations. And that's why the Patriots have the best record in the NFL. So, or, you know, tied with some other teams. So it's culture. And that kind of falls back to being in the right place in the right time with the right people around you.
Brian Hoyer joining us. Brian, there are young quarterbacks around the NFL who are intriguing. We know you like Joe Milton. We had talked about him on the show. Like,
yeah,
he's sitting there behind Drake May. You could go get him. And the Cowboys did. He's sitting behind Dak Prescott, so he's not going to play there. If you're the Browns and you're looking at this, do you think you have your guy? Would you rather look around the league and see a guy like Joe Milton, make a play for him? Or are you thinking of more veteran free agent or even drafting a guy next year and thinking you've solved your problem?
Yeah, I think that's always the big question for every organization that doesn't have the franchise quarterback. Where are we going to find it? Is it someone on someone else's roster who's maybe stuck behind a good player? Is it in the draft? How are you going to handle that situation? And I would say it's kind of good timing that Shador is going to get a chance to play. Because, look, I think you've seen enough from Dylan Gabriel to decide whether you're going to use a draft pick on a quarterback high next year. Now it's Shador's turn to maybe convince you that maybe you don't have to do it. And look, I haven't gotten extensive into studying the college quarterbacks, but I would say I've watched enough of this Mendoza kid to really like him out of Indiana. He actually reminds me a little bit of Drake May, not just the playing style, but the way he carries himself. And, you know, until you figure that out, it's just your team is in purgatory. And the Browns aren't the only organization. There's a lot of them that are always out there searching for that quarterback. And sometimes you commit to a guy and it ends up not being the right one. And I would say this whole conversation goes back to signing Deshaun Watson, giving him the guaranteed contract and then not working out. And that put the organization behind the eight ball to now have to go out and find it again. And so how do you do that? It's got to be the draft. It's got to be really good scouting as far as players that might be available next year, because we all know the good ones aren't going to make it to your team. They're either going to get franchise tagged. I mean, the only major trade that you can think of is Stafford to LA, and I would say that's worked out for both teams, and that's like a once in a lifetime type trade. So I don't think you're going to be able to pull something like that off. You're going to have to evaluate, is it a guy like Mac Jones? Is it a guy who went out and kind of reinvented his career out in San Francisco by playing under Kyle Shanahan? Can he come and recreate that in Cleveland? I don't know. I mean, it's not as good of a situation as what he's played in San Francisco. So I don't know. And I know Mac, and he's a competitor, but he needs to be in the right situation with the right play caller and the right players around him. So it's going to be interesting. And ultimately, they need to let Shador play a significant amount the rest of the season to really get a gauge on where he's at and how they should approach it in the offseason.
All right, Brian, you coming back? You taking St. Ignatius' job or what? I haven't heard your name yet. I'm waiting for it. I'm throwing your name in. I heard them talking about Brian Hoyer taking the St. Ignatius' job on the radio today.
Oh, man, I don't know about that. My kids are pretty settled up here in Boston. I actually help coach at a high school that I would compare very similarly to Ignatius that my son goes to. You know, it's funny, I retired and we asked the kids, like, all right, you know, what do you guys want to do? Like, Cleveland? They're like, Cleveland? We never lived in Cleveland. What are we going to move back there for? So I got to do what's best for the kids. I'm always supporting them. I've reached out and offered, you know, if they ever, you know, have a question or I can help in some way. Look, we have a lot of great alumni who have experience, whether it's me, Dave Ragone, Tom Arth, Scott Mutrin, guys that I all keep in touch with, Jonathan Gannon. I mean, there's plenty of guys that they can lean on to help make that decision, and we're all more than happy to help, and we want to see that program get back to where it was when we played there.
Okay, so let me say, Brian Hoyer is interested in the saying this, and he wants his kids to play there too. All right, great. We'll start that rumor now. I'm just kidding. Thanks, Brian. Hey,
what's the NIL? What's the NIL rate over there?
Oh, wow.
You know, it's all
it
about
is St. Ignatius.
Brian, please.
You know, come on now.
Brian, thanks for being with us, buddy.
Hey, Brian, thank you.
And
I just want to thank you one other thing. Thanks for opening the playbook while you were here. We appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Appreciate that. Thank you.
See you, Brian. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Brian.
See ya.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day. now? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Big day, big week here in Cleveland. Shedeur Sanders going to get his first start on Sunday. Now, our next guest, we love to talk a lot of college football with. He joins us most weeks, Thursdays, 4:20. Today, though, you know we got to talk some Shedeur Sanders with him because he has been banging the drum for Shedeur here in Cleveland of the college football news. Pete Futek joining us now on the Fan Hotline. Pete, welcome to the show.
Happy Shedeur Week. The sports radio place, this is the dream. This is everything, right?
I mean, it's been a very kind week to us, yes, because he's going to start. What are your expectations for Shedeur on Sunday?
He'll be awful. Look, he's a rookie. Like, it's all over NFL. It's a problem with the NFL. Like, all my Minnesota Vikings friends, oh, J.J. McCarthy's awful. Well, yeah, he didn't play last year, and he's only, had a couple games in. Like, last year in Chicago, oh, we have to have a talk about Caleb Williams. Well, these guys don't just come out and fling it all over the place and become Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes isn't Patrick Mahomes as a rookie. He didn't start until late in the year. It was Alex Smith who got, the first 12 games. So, he's going to make mistakes. He's not going to be great. He'll play, he's an accurate quarterback. He just needs time to work. They're going to pressure him. And he's not going to be very good. But you know what? This is part of being a rookie quarterback.
Well, it sounds sensible, Pete. That's just not how we operate around these parts for the most part.
Of course, he didn't win the Super Bowl yet?
I know, right? It's funny. We have a couple guests on this week already, and at certain points, either Nick or myself had to be like, it was a half of a football game. Like, what are we really doing here?
Yeah, no, again, you can't. I know there's a day, that day's over now where, you got a guy a year and a half. So remember, Peyton Manning was miserable his first year. As a through like 18 interceptions or something.
It was like 28 actually.
Yeah, or something insane. Again, I'm not saying I'm not trying to make excuses right out of the gate, but temper the expectations. I mean, who knows if he's good? And the only way you never know is give the guy time, and then all of a sudden the game maybe slows down for him next year. So all you're looking for is get Judkins going, get that running game working, take the pressure off him, and see if he can at least look like he's got potential or down the road that there's something there.
Pete, is this Ohio State team better than last year's Ohio State team?
No, it's not. And last year's team was kind of, it was better. I told you guys all year, it was the best team in the country from the start. It just had a little head case problem when it came to, getting out of its own way against Michigan. And that Oregon team was even better than this year's team. This seems good, but it doesn't have the experience. It doesn't have quite the overall guys. And the other part about this too is they haven't played anybody since August. Look, I mean, this is going to be the fifth straight game that they're going to go against a team that's not going to go to a bowl game. So it's not been an actual killer. They're doing performance art. It's great. They're getting a bunch of live scrimmages in. And I'm not saying they're not good. I'm not saying that they can't win the national championship. But let's just kind of wait and see a little bit here because they should destroy Rutgers. It's not going to be a problem. And they'll beat Michigan. I don't want to go there yet, but come on. If they don't beat Michigan, it's their own fault. But when they get to that tournament, I'm not sold on anybody right now, but Georgia and Notre Dame being all that great. But Ohio State's right there. But in terms of talent, no, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't be the number one team and shouldn't win the national championship again. But this is not the same team as last year.
Yeah, that is interesting because all last year, Pete, you just kept banging the drum like they're going to win it. They're going to win it. They're going to win it. And then I've not heard that same thing from you this year.
No, because we don't know. I mean, they haven't had any drama. I mean, Arch Manning had the ball in his hands in the final drive. That was about it. Everything else has been a live scrimmage for this team. And give it, it's on them. They're great. You don't get to this point in the season being as dominant as you are in the Big Ten, no matter who you've played, without being really, really awesome. I'm not saying they're not going to win the national championship. I'm just saying it's like it's not the, you know, the coronation like, you know, it might be considered by some. You know, but they're awesome. This is a great team. But we just don't know because they haven't played anybody in a month. And who knows what happens when Julian Sand gets some pressure on him? Who knows when that running game has to rely on? Who knows when they have to actually perform when it really matters? And we are going to find out next week.
Pete, do you think Julian Sand ends up in the top three in Heisman voting?
Only because who the heck else is there? You know, look, there's usually, and I keep saying this as a Heisman voter, wait until the conference championships because, you know, I think I voted for Bryce Young, you know, a few years back because of what he did late in the season. And last year, Scadaboo went from not on my Heisman finalist list to number two because, you know, he turned out to be the Big 12 player, best player of the Big 12 when he carried him to the college football playoff and for what he did in the Big 12 championship. So let's see. I mean, if Ohio State destroys Indiana and Mendoza's awful, well, there goes that. Ty Simpson pretty much ended it last week. Jeremiah Love doesn't have any games left to play. I'm not going to do the Jacob Rodriguez thing. But the problem with Sand is it's, you know, I'm not dogging him in any way. He's an NFL starter. He's really good. He's going to be great. He's probably like the fifth best player on this team. I mean, Caleb Downs, even though the stats aren't there, is probably the best player if it's not Jeremiah Smith. You know, so this team's just so loaded. He would be the representative of the number one team in the country in a Gino Toretta sort of way, but only because there's no one else there. But he'll get his shot. If he rocks against Michigan and is brilliant against Indiana, yeah, Heisman's probably his.
Do Alabama fans have a right to be mad with how the rankings came out?
No, it's fine. And actually, it's they caught a break. But they need more help than I think they actually believe. At some point, we're going to have a talk about BYU because BYU, if they go 11-1 and their one loss is to Texas Tech, and then they lose again in the Big 12 championship, God forbid they win it, because then what do you do? Alabama's kind of in trouble. Notre Dame should be less comfortable than it is, but the committee loves them, and they're not going to knock them down any further than this. Notre Dame got ranked too high from the beginning, and now they're just not going to change it. So it is Alabama. But if Alabama comes out and destroys Auburn, then I think it's over. And Alabama's probably going to play for the SEC championship after all the tiebreakers happen. But they do have the resume. I think the SEC is overrated, but they did beat Georgia at Georgia. They did beat Vanderbilt by double digits, even though as investors know that was kind of a weird double-digit game. But they should not be quite as comfortable as they might feel right now.
Pete, did you like James Franklin to Virginia Tech?
I still like James Franklin at Penn State, but that's just me. So yeah, he's a very, very good head coach. You know, he's a coach who should have gone maybe somewhere even bigger. I wanted him at Wisconsin, but okay, it's Virginia Tech. That's a place he can win at right away. He can certainly recruit. He's certainly good enough. The whole argument, oh well, you can't win the big games. Well, there aren't a lot of big games in the ACC. So if he wins all the little ones and the medium range ones, Virginia Tech will be just fine. And at a place like that, and in a conference like that, the goal is be in the ACC title hunt every year. And yeah, that's not that high a bar to set for a guy like Franklin to sort of match.
I heard Petiti the other day talking about how he wants to make this now like 20. Yeah, that's all I think about. But like he wanted to make this like 24 teams, and he's a TV guy. Oh, what else is he going to think? He's always going to want to try to go for these money grabs and try to make as many games televised as he can. He's talking about getting rid of the Big Ten title game in the process and putting the playoff game there. And it's like, all right, fine, do whatever you want to do. But I do wonder if it's turning people off. And I know you have metrics and you have your own site that you go off of and everything. But do you feel like there's less interest in college football with all the changes that have been made and how it feels so playoff heavy now, way more than it used to be? Or is it just not that way and it's just a me problem?
The difference is that more teams care because right now you're fired up if you're a BYU fan or a Texas Tech fan or a Miami fan or a Notre Dame fan. Because, like, you know, or look at last year, Alabama's out of the college football playoff after the Michigan loss. You know, so, like, you have room to spill. You know, you can lose two games and still be alive in this. Oklahoma fans are now back in. It's you have way more teams engaged than before. You know, and, you know, look at the ACC. The old college football playoff four-team thing, nobody would pay attention to the ACC again. Notre Dame's season would have been over in the second week of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, there's all these different programs. that now are still alive and there are storylines behind them. And now the ACC championship matters. Virginia versus Georgia Tech, probably. You know, now you've got those fan bases who kick in. And so, you know, look, if you're a North Texas fan right now, if you're a San Diego State fan or a James Madison fan, yeah, you're a little fired up. So on the whole, it's a good thing. If you expand it further, then then it becomes college basketball and the regular season doesn't matter as much. But I do like the idea of somehow the conference championship games being folded in, because now this whole idea that the college football playoff committee is like, well, we're not going to punish teams for a loss in their conference championship. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Why not? You know, that's part of you got to take the whole point of the playoff committee is to take the entire picture, take the snapshot, and then go from there. And if you're going to say, well, if you're 10-2 and you make the playoff and you lose like Alabama might do, well, then you're still in anyway. That's just not right.
Pete, Ohio State, the last tune-up before Michigan in a week's time. They've got Rutgers. The line is 32.5 points. Can I interest you, given Ryan Day has piddled down his leg a few times heading into Michigan, I will ask you, is there any element of this game you think could be a trap game for Ohio State?
Don't get Julian Sand hurt. Like that right now, it's the Carson Beck SEC championship game of last year thing. All these games, you know, whether it's Georgia playing Charlotte, don't get Gunnar Stockton hurt. Don't get Ty Simpson hurt against Eastern Illinois. Don't get your starting quarterback hurt before it really, really matters. So for Ohio State, all you care about is get out of this clean. You're not going to lose to Rutgers. And if anything, you come in, you do it, you're working like they've been clinical all year. The one thing I will say about this team even more than last year's team, though, is it knows what it is. It doesn't have to go for style points. It doesn't care about that. It's like get in, get the win, work on what you need to do, and just move on. It's a weird way, even though it's younger, it's a far more confident-looking team than last year's team. So, like, just get in. Rutgers is not going to stop anything you're going to want to do. So just get it over with fast and get Stan and Smith and all those guys on the sidelines as fast as humanly possible.
All right, Pete, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week as we will be tuning up for, of course. Actually, no, we won't. Next Thursday is maybe I'll talk to you before next Thursday, then.
So we can't do Shedeur Sanders MVP talk next week?
Well, we definitely can.
We're definitely going to have to get you then before Thursday because I forgot it was Gobbler Day. All right, buddy, be good.
Thanks, Pete.
Later, guys.
Welcome in, Jason Lloyd. He penned an article from The Athletic. Opened up Pandora's box to a lot of different things about this setup with the Cleveland Browns and why Shedeur's playing already. And he joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. Jason, good morning to you. If Kevin Stefanski had his way, who would be playing quarterback right now getting ready for Sunday against the Raiders?
Oh, jeez.
With Dylan Gabriel injured, with him still with a concussion, who would be playing quarterback?
Given who he's picking from here, Shedeur and Zappe?
Throw Deshaun Watson in there. What the hell?
Oh, man. Boy, you're really coming out guns blazing. Truth Serum, who do I think Kevin would want playing? I would probably have... Oh, God. You're going to turn this into a clip on me. I could see it already.
Just answer the question. You don't even check your mentions, so just answer it.
I took Twitter off my phone. I don't even have it on my phone.
Wow.
It's a beautiful life.
Tough talking, Jason.
Yeah, probably Bailey, if I'm being honest. Probably Bailey.
Okay. So this is my thing. I came to a conclusion yesterday and this morning. I woke up at 1 o'clock this morning. Many people know I'm a Shedeur fan. They're saying I'm a turncoat right now. I'm being called a Benedict Arnold. Because
join the club.
I just think, well, no, I like Shedeur, and that's why I'm so nervous about Sunday, because I'm like, I don't see it going well for him. I could see them actually still winning because the Raiders are terrible, but I just don't think it's going to go very good at all. Like, none of this makes sense. I'm trying to hurry an off-season of work into 3 days and to make this easier. This is not a good setup, and it's not about him as much as it is about the Browns this year. Like, this is not the way you treat rookies.
No, I mean, that last thing is the most important thing. One is, how often does a third-round rookie quarterback and or a fifth-round rookie quarterback ever have success in the NFL? Like, incredibly rare. Rarely are they even on the field. let alone having success. So, like, what's the bar you're talking about with Shador? I think Shador's going to look better than he did Sunday next week. I mean, the Raiders are terrible.
Well, I'd certainly hope so.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, there's degrees to this. Is he going to go out here and throw for 300 yards and put up 30 points? Highly doubtful. And that's not even all. Like, the thing I've been screaming all year, and no one really cared, and just kept saying fire everybody. But now suddenly, I think the Shador fans care. Is like, the tackles are the worst in the league, and I don't have the updated numbers, but this was as of a few weeks ago. They haven't changed. Slowest receivers in the league are among the slowest receivers in the league. They don't create separation. They don't make catches in traffic, and they drop first downs. Now, the first down drops have actually seemed to have gone away. You know, we haven't been screaming about the drops quite as much here the last few weeks, but this is a horrendous offense in general. So what quarterback is going to come in here and have success? So that part of it isn't even on him. That's just what he has to work with around him that's setting him up for failure. And then you mix in his strengths and his shortcomings. And, yeah, no, it's really hard to get a fair evaluation on any of these guys because of the state of the offense. But, you know, everything that we were told, everything that we were saying in the pre-draft process, you saw unfold. Yeah, it was only two quarters. Yeah, it was one half. The alarming part is everything that we heard bad, you saw with your own eyes immediately. Doesn't know what he's looking at, holds on the ball too long, turns his back. Like, trifecta, 1, 2, 3. You saw it all. So, like, that's why he fell, guys. It's not a conspiracy that the NFL has against him. It's not the Browns trying. Like, we have heard there have been so many stupid things said, just totally irrational, dumb, emotional things said over the last 6 months. And I left Sunday going, okay, well, there you go. Now you saw it. Now you've seen it for yourself. Like, that's why. That doesn't mean he can't have a successful NFL career. I would never say after two quarters, a guy is or is not going to have a good career in the NFL. The only thing I've said all year is he's not ready right now. The best thing he could have done and should have done would be to go to Baltimore or Philly. And they didn't want to do that. So now here we are.
All right, Jason, with your reporting over the last few days that Kevin Stefanski had been telling members of the organization that the plan was to redshirt Shador, the organization still paved the way by eliminating guys ahead of him. Yep. So that he would be played. Was there a conflict within the organization? Are there two distinct sides of this? One saying he shouldn't play this year. The other saying we're going to make sure that he gets on the football field.
Yeah, I can't answer that definitively. You can certainly build that case, but I can't sit here and tell you with clarity, absolutely yes or absolutely no. I don't know. But if you watch, and that's the thing that has baffled me throughout all of this, is the way that they handled the trading the veterans. I didn't understand why they traded Kenny Pickett. We talked about that. It didn't make sense to me because he pulls his hamstring. You're going to trade him? Like, really? He's a veteran quarterback. I think he can miss a couple of weeks and be okay. So that's the one that, and like when they signed Flacco, I told you guys when they signed Flacco, I don't understand this. I don't know why you're signing a 40-year-old quarterback. Like, what is the upside in this? This is a bad football team. Now you can build the case and this part makes sense. Like, okay, you've got two veterans in the room now that are on cheap deals. You've got Pickett, you've got Flacco. And they're not costing you a lot of money because you can't afford a lot of money on a quarterback right now because of the cap situation. We don't even need to get into all that. We all know why. So, okay, you've got two veterans. One's going to start. One's going to be the backup. They can at least hold down the room. They are professionals. They know how to go about their business and handle their business. There'll be a good presence in the locker room. Okay, now you've taken the project quarterback in the third round in Dylan. He's not going to have to play right away unless things really get weird because you've got two veterans in front of him. Okay, there's our quarterback room. Drive home from the draft Friday night from Berea feeling pretty good about where things stand. And then all of a sudden, Saturday morning, like, you know what? Let's take Shador. And that threw a grenade into the room that blew the whole thing up because now all of a sudden, now you're running these crazy practices where you've got four quarterbacks and you're going on two fields and now you're trading the veterans because you got to see what you've got in these rookies. When for 24 hours, if you pull out and you look at it for 24 hours, they had a decent plan. Now, I have heard nobody say Dylan Gabriel was going to be the franchise quarterback for this team for the next 10 years. So if you want to kill him for spending a top 100 pick on a backup quarterback, go right ahead. But the point was when they left the draft after night two, they had two veteran quarterbacks and a project third third round and third string quarterback who they could bring along slowly, see what they have in them. And then more than likely they would revisit quarterback in the draft again this coming year. It sounds fine in theory. Like, okay, I can get that. I can get behind that. It's when they woke up Saturday and said, nah, let's take Shador. That's when everything started to get weird.
Jason Lloyd joining us from The Athletic. So, again, for Kevin, I mean, you said he'd probably play Zappe right now. How does he plan on going about getting Shador ready this week? Because that's my whole thing. I'm going, man, I just don't trust the setup. It ain't even about the quarterback. I don't trust the setup. I didn't think it was fair to Dylan either.
No, I agree. There's no talent on this offense. Now, what do you got in your favor? It's a road game, but it's not really a road game because the Raiders don't have very good crowds there. The Raiders are an awful football team. So, this is a very winnable game. And if he can make some throws early and get some confidence, set him up with some quick, easy throws, keep things very simple, and give him an opportunity to play to his strengths. And he made a couple of throws Sunday that I thought were terrific. Everybody's like raving about the Fannin throw, and I get it. It was a good throw. That to me, that's also just a normal standard NFL quarterback play. The pocket held for him for once. He had a clean pocket. He stepped into the throw. He made a great throw to a wide open receiver in the middle of the field. I like the Larvae Dane throw in the corner, and I heard Albert yesterday saying that was a terrible decision because he was covered and it should have gone to the flat and Judy. Okay, fine. Yeah, you can make that. I've seen the film breakdowns. He should have gone to Judy. Fine. Just the being able to see, like, I got one-on-one on the outside. I'm going to put a ball up and let my guy go make a play. Now, granted, you probably know your personnel. That's Gage Larvae Dane, and it's not Jerry Judy, who hasn't even been all that great. You know, if it's Jamar Chase out there, you give it to him every time and you let him go make a play. I'm just saying the ball placement, the way he threw it, I thought that was a terrific throw. Personally, I thought that was his best throw of the night. So there are tools that you can work with. It's everything else that you have to sort of mitigate and cover up for right now because he's a little bit raw in NFL systems. So, you got to simplify things. He's got to get it out quick. Can't hold on to the ball. And you're right. How do you clean up? Like, this has been an issue for 4 years and you're going to fix it in 1 week with three practices? No, probably not. But, you know, this is why I thought it was a bad idea to play him against the Ravens when the whole thing of, you know, that's enough of Dylan. Let's start Shador. I'm like, I'm not putting him out there. I would not want to put him out there against Baltimore's defense because they're going to blitz the crap out of him. And that's exactly what happened. The Raiders don't blitz a ton. You're probably going to see that.
They will this week.
I think they will this week.
Right. Yep, you're right. They will. And they're going to try and confuse him. They're going to disguise looks. They're going to put eight on the line, drop two, and he's got to figure out which two are dropping. And we'll see. So am I expecting brilliance? No. Am I expecting improvement from what we saw Sunday? Absolutely.
Jason Lloyd, join us right now. All right. You're not looking into a camera right now. We are. But we have our audience of Shador fans around the country. They're going to be listening very closely to this question and answer right now. So I will ask you point blank, Jason Lloyd, how well does Shador Sanders have to play in his allotted time the rest of the season for the Browns not to take a quarterback in the first round with one of their two picks?
I mean, he would have to play abundantly well. He would have to make it, and he would have to make it abundantly clear, you don't need to go looking any longer. I am your answer. And that's going to be hard because of the pieces around him, because the pieces around him are not very good. Flacco couldn't make it work. Dylan Gabriel couldn't make it work. And now it's on him to do it. So, I mean, I've thought all year they're going to go back and revisit quarterback again next offseason. This was always a one-year bridge. Last year's quarterback class was horrendous. And they had the second pick in a one-quarterback draft, as my buddy Zach has often said. And it's hilarious, and it's true. Like, that's Cleveland. They got the second pick in a one-quarterback draft. What other quarterbacks from this class have been great? You want Tyler Shuck? Well, then you have to give up Quinshon Judkins or Schlesinger off this team to get him. So, like, there just was nothing to pick from. So, I mean, they got a handful of games left. If he goes out and absolutely dominates, and if he balls out Sunday and plays like, you know, we are not expecting, if he does throw for 300 and hang 30 on them, yeah, he's got the job for the foreseeable future, I think, for at least another couple of weeks, for sure. regardless of how anyone thinks or feels. Because if you can make it work with this mess, all credit to you, because nobody else has been able to figure it out. But to win the job for the end of the year, he's going to have to win multiple games. He's going to have to beat teams that we don't think are games that they would win otherwise. And he's going to have to be the difference maker. And I don't know how realistic that is or not, but if you're asking me what has to happen, that's probably what has to happen.
Lloyd has us just staring into the ether right now with that answer, because that to Shador fans are going to be like, well, what was the point of this whole situation? Why were we drafted? Because they don't think he was a fifth rounder.
There's another question I want to ask.
Think he was Mel Kiper's number one on the board at one point. So they can't get it out of their head that he slipped, and they allege it's this whole vast conspiracy that all the teams got together and said they weren't going to draft him. Does that make you fall to five, though?
Why? Why was there this grand conspiracy? Why did nobody want him? Why, at the most important position in the league where teams are desperate to get a game changer and a franchise pillar, why would they turn their nose to him if they thought he was that good? The Browns have been desperate for a quarterback for 25 years. Why would they sabotage a kid at the position they need most of anything?
They wouldn't do it on purpose.
It is nonsense.
Well, that's true. They might do it by accident.
Yeah,
sure.
I think they've done it on accident, but I don't think they do it on purpose.
And that's why I don't see a path for him here to be the guy. And Lonnie kind of said, like, yeah, I think they're going to revisit quarterback again in the offseason. The best thing could have been for him, go to Baltimore, go to Philly, go sit behind an MVP. A Super Bowl MVP or a league MVP.
That would have angered him, too, because he would have sat out the whole year.
Yes, and he probably would sit next year, too. And you know what? After sitting for 2 years, maybe they correct some of these things. And then the PR machine starts. And then they start leaking to the league mouthpieces about how great Shador looks. And then they trade him. They work with him and trade him into a situation where a team needs a quarterback, where he would be set up for success. And then you press launch on the button, and now he's ready to go. Like, it would give him the best opportunity to have great success. Again, I am not saying Shador Sanders will never be a great quarterback in the NFL. I don't know if he will be or not. I just know from everything I have heard since they took him, he's not ready now. And when you're not ready now, you're expecting a franchise that has not developed a quarterback in 25 years. You're trusting them to develop him as a fifth-round pick? What would ever give you the belief? They had the number one pick multiple times. They've had first round picks, and including the number one pick, obviously, in Baker. So why? What makes you think that this organization would be the organization that would develop a fifth round pick? I just don't see the path for him here.
League mouthpiece. Who are you taking a shot at? Come on, Jason, answer the question, tough guy.
I got a couple people in mind, but you're not getting me on this one.
Are we going to see Deshaun Watson this year?
I'm going to stand by my answer. You better not. Yeah, I don't care who you ask.
That's an opinion. That's an opinion. I need an answer. I need an answer of what you think is going to happen.
That's my answer. You better not.
No, it's not.
The answer. Your owner has now come out twice. He doubled down on it, saying it was a mistake. How do you put him back out there when your owner has said twice it's a mistake?
Can I ask a counterpoint?
Go ahead.
What's it matter in the last 2 weeks of the season, especially if they're trying to lose?
What's Jeff Driscoll doing? Go sign Jeff Driscoll. Put him back out there. And I've heard like Albert say, you're trying to get something for your investment. No, the investment's gone. And the fact that he's even still on the roster is a disgrace. Like, they should have figured it out with the cap before now. It's embarrassment that he's still here. He shouldn't have been here. They should have cut him after last year, but they keep trotting him out with the practices and the videos and all that. I don't understand. They're not making the videos. It's him doing it with the Instagram or whatever else. He should have been cut. And listen, when at the time of the trade, I will never run from this. I said, I understood why they made the deal. I understood what was going on with Baker behind the scenes and how he was melting down. He wouldn't get back to him. He wouldn't return their text. And there was so much going on there. And at the time, he looked like he had an MVP quarterback in front of you. I'm not killing them for making the trade. As horrendous as it was, it's hypocritical of me if I come out and kill them now for making the trade. I totally get why they made the trade. It was a magnificent disaster, and good teams identify that and get off of that as soon as possible, and they have not done that.
All right, Jason, thank you very much for the time. Read them in The Athletic. Thank you.
All right, see you, boys.
Jason Lloyd from The Athletic. on the fan hotline. Did you like those answers? I did.
Yeah, most of them. Yeah.
I thought they made, I have to tell you, I didn't like hearing them, but I thought they made sense, I should say.
I wonder what the Shador people that are engaging with us right now, how would you have felt now about sitting at least a year? Jason said 2 years. The guy that you thought was a number one quarterback on the board at one point, how would you feel if he was in Philadelphia or Baltimore sitting at least one full year?
It would have made more sense to sit behind Lamar Jackson.
I want to ask them. I want to ask them.
Well, can I already agree with them and say you're comparing Lamar Jackson to Dylan Gabriel? Can I already agree? I hate to put their opinion in.
The reason I ask is because now they all seem fired up about this situation. This isn't going to be right. They're screwing up his development. All right, the teams that would have done it correctly, they would have sat your guy, and you wouldn't have seen him on a football field for at least a year.
But then again, they're mad at me because I'm saying it ain't going to go well Sunday. One hand washes the others, fellas.
Back on Afternoon Drive, Pete Futek coming up in 1 hour's time. The quarterback Deadpool coming up at 3:40. But obviously, we also got to get to the breaking news from the Browns earlier today. We'll have a conversation on. But Shador Sanders and the Browns getting ready for the Raiders game. Our next guest has been a believer in Shador Sanders since going back to college. Of course, this is an opportunity to see the first start for Shador Sanders in the NFL. To talk about that and so much more, we head out to the fan hotline and welcome on the owner and operator of Football Game Plan and CBS Sports HQ, Emory Hunt. Emory, welcome to the show, bud.
Glad to be on, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Well, it's always great to have you. Always have such a great perspective on this. I guess we'll start here. You've been a guy that believed in Shador in the pre-draft process and all the way through the draft. What are your expectations on Sunday for Shador in his first NFL start?
It's going to be exciting because the one thing he has right now with the Browns that he's never had at Jackson State or at Colorado is a run game. And so the fact that he can play a balanced game, I'm excited to see what that looks like. That's something that we hadn't really seen before. But I expect him personally just to play within himself, play his game, do the easy stuff within the 20s and inside the 20 where he really excelled in college, be Shador Sanders. So he can play the Dylan Gabriel game within the 20s. And then once you get inside the 20s, that's when you see him supersede and play above the X's and O's. And that's where Shador Sanders really stood out at Jackson State. He stood out there in Colorado, and he's going to stand out here, I believe, in the pros in that regard.
Yeah, it's something we've been talking about for the first little bit of the show here is, will he revert back to what we think Stefanski wants him to be, which is more like Dylan Gabriel, or is he going to be able to be himself? Do you feel like when you watch on Sunday, you'll see classic Shador?
Yeah, you'll see classic Shador. And the thing is, here's the ironic twist about this ball game is because they can play the Dylan Gabriel game and win this ball game strictly off the run game and the defense, because that's where the Raiders will have some issues dealing with the Browns defense and also dealing with the consistency of this run game. Now, when you add the ability to push the ball at the intermediate to deep levels as opposed to short to intermediate, that's where Shador Sanders can help extend this game and help these guys score 20 points offensively as opposed to what we've seen from them under Gabriel in this offense, which has been sort of truncated in terms of it's a short to short intermediate as opposed to an intermediate to deep passing game. So when you have the ability to expand the passing game, you kind of lift that umbrella up a little bit on the defense, which allows you then to run the football rather well. Play action pass will be a much more vital and critical and successful, and you have a threat now at quarterback that can push that ball deep, which changes how you play defense against the Browns.
Emory, I'm not going to surprise you here. The discourse around Shador has taken over the actual football of Shador with people that don't like him. We call him Shahaters, and the people that just unapologetically love him. Supporters, I'm curious to take people all the way back to the draft. One of the knocks from Shahaders is, well, he's a fifth-round pick. Is that where you had, in terms of his draft value, where did you have Shador and why?
He was my number one quarterback in the class, and I compared him to Joe Burrow. And the reason why I compared him to Burrow, we saw that manifest itself in the preseason, both with Burrow and with Shador, right? We saw Shador not knowing when to let a dead play die, took a crazy sack. Then we saw Burrow later on that week against the Washington Commanders in the preseason, took a crazy sack where he held the ball for like 9 seconds instead of throwing it away and took like a 15-yard loss. So that was the Shador part negative that I compared Burrow to. The positive was that when the game is on the line, when you need those gotta-have-it moments, that's what Shador really excels. And we saw that at Jackson State time and time again, playing high-level football, winning back-to-back SWAC championships. And we saw it at Colorado when he was able to turn that team around in just one short offseason. But my thing is, people are always fascinated. When you talk about fifth-round pick, he's not a fifth-round talent. He went in the fifth round. That's like saying Isaiah Bond is an undrafted talent. No, he was a first- or second-round talent that just happened to go undrafted because of unforeseen issues. But these are the same people that had Shador Sanders as day-one pick or a second-round talent. Now, these are the same ones that are telling us that the 2026 class is going to be great with Nussmeier, Beck, Arch Manning, Kay Kubnick, Lenora Sellers. Not one of these same people mentioned Moore, Simpson, and Mendoza. So why would we listen to those same people when they just told us that their evaluation of talent ain't worth the paper it's printed on? So to me, it's okay to get a quarterback wherever you get him, just as long as he can play, because we've seen it done with Jalen Hurts, Andy Dalton, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Kaepernick, Purdy, Cousins, Favre, Moon, Brady, Derek Carr, Montana, Boomer, Tyson, Dak Prescott, Tony Romo, Matt Hasselbeck, Ken Anderson, Jeff Garcia, Cunningham, Warner, Faust. Can I go on? Because it's it's crazy to think that a dude just went in the fifth round, can't play. So just because he went where he went, that just cancels out everything that you watched him with your own two eyes in college at two different universities.
Okay, so what's the story on Monday if it doesn't work out on Sunday? And you know, this is coming from someone like myself that has defended Shador the entire time.
Bullshit Porter.
And so I'm not trying to put you on a spot. But I am curious of your angle on it. I'm curious of if it doesn't go well on Sunday, what do you think the reasoning behind that will be, or what do you think your answer will be?
Here's the thing. We saw it didn't go particularly well in 38 plays, and people already have said he can't play in the NFL of 38 snaps. Nothing will change regardless of the outcome because the goalposts are already starting to move. I've seen some people say, there's nothing he can do in these last games that would stop the Browns from taking a quarterback in the first round. Like, okay, bro, like you even see the rest of the season and you already moving the goalposts. That we should be the most in-shape country with the way folks move goalposts around, right? It don't matter if he throws for 400 yards or they go out there and he plays an elongated game like he played against the Baltimore Ravens where it's just sloppy. It's his first start, and you got to offer him the same grace that you offered Dillon Gabriel in his first start and allow him to grow. And then after the season, when he has his 6 or 7 games and you compare those with Dillon Gabriel's 6 or 7 games and you come to a conclusion, okay, well, maybe we can build around these two guys, or maybe we can go into the draft or go into free agency and get someone, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater after one full start of his first full season, first full week of practice as a starter, just because you don't like the guy. I just think that's just asinine. Maybe I'm the crazy one that's trying to keep it football when everybody else around me trying to do it the other way.
Emory Hunt, owner of Football Game Plan, CBS Sports HQ as well on the Fan Hotline here, breaking down Shador's first start. Now, there is still a wide contingent of people that at this moment believe the Browns will be going quarterback early in this draft. There's been a lot of debate about the worthiness of the potentially draft-eligible 2026 quarterback. So I'll ask you, and I know this is early because we still have the playoffs to go. We still have a couple more weeks of the regular season to go. But what draft-eligible quarterbacks for 2026 in college have impressed you?
Haynes King, number one. Because it's funny with Haynes King, I know he's an older prospect, but at this point at quarterback, we don't care. You saw the Saints take Tyler Shuck in the second round. So if you could play, you could play. So for me with Haynes King, it's funny because all you hear surrounding him is, if he could throw, he'd be great. If he could throw, he could be fine. He runs really well. But every time you look up, he's like 35 or 38, 400 yards passing, and 150 yards rushing, right? Like, and his team is winning. So those quarterbacks I like. Talen Green has the Randall Cunningham athleticism, but he puts the ball on the turf a lot. That wouldn't be someone I would take in the first round, but definitely someone that has work-withable tools. And when you look at the guys that people are talking about, the Dante Moores, you kind of want to see it consistently. We only seen it for 1 year. Ty Simpson, really small sample size with no A-plus traits in terms of, like, arm strength or mobility. Now, he's scrappy, and right now he plays kind of like how Mac Jones plays, which I like. You know, a guy that just don't care about what's going on. He's going to try to find a way to make a play. And Mendoza, I feel like, is getting the – somebody got to be first overall, right? So they're pushing Mendoza, and I think that's unfair to him, even though he does have some pro tools. He has a good arm. He got great velocity. I like that he's being battle-tested this year. And so the book is still open for him because he still has some more high-leverage games left on the schedule. But right now, I wouldn't have a first-round grade on any quarterback. But again, you're talking to somebody that doesn't mind taking a quarterback in the third round. If he can play, let him be the starter. If anything, that helps your organization out, spend money elsewhere.
All right, Emory, I like how you think for the most part, so I want your big picture thought on this, okay? Jimmy Haslam's like, hey, Emory, I heard you on 92.3 The Fan. I need to do with Paul DePodesta. You're my guy. And so tomorrow, you become Paul DePodesta, okay?
Can we be your acolytes, by the way? Can we be your...
Glad we take the job with you. Yeah.
We just want to talk football and maybe drink some beer. I don't know if that's allowed.
Not much
job.
Actual work, though. Just like doing those two things. No. Not even
very
putting them out there.
Very little actual practical use for you, but we're good hangs.
We'll be your henchmen. So you're in charge of fixing the Browns. How do you do it? What's your roadmap? What does this look like?
Point of attack play wins you games at the youth level, at the high school level, at the college level, at the pro level. So I'm looking to, you know, rebuild the offensive line. I think the Browns did a fantastic job doing that on the defensive side this year. And I think when we're talking about rebuilding the offensive line, you could bring back some of the veterans that you currently have on the roster, but you also can have a plan in place, get some high leverage guys that can grow with your organization up front. Because if you can't win the point of attack, nothing else truly matters. And this is coming from a former college running back that loves skill positions, but I have grown. The more I've matured, I've understood the value of having great point of attack play. And then I would also try to find some receivers, secondary players as well, because that's what they have to do. They have to get better and bigger around Shedeur Sanders, in my opinion. But point of attack play is where you have to be solid first on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they drafted four offensive linemen this year. But give us some of the names to watch on offense that you think – yeah, let's go under the assumption that Stefanski's still here, that fit maybe what the Browns like to do.
I like Spencer Fano, the tackle out of Utah. You know, you can't go wrong with it. Yeah, that's one of these sight unseen type programs. If you tell me we got a lineman from Utah or, you know, defensive player from Kansas State, I don't even have to see the tape. I'm all in. I'm sold, right? So Fano is one of those guys. I also like Caden Proctor, big mammoth tackle from Alabama. To me, that's someone that, you know, If he can get, I know this sounds weird to say, but if he can get that weight down a little bit, we'll see the best of him. And when you think about the potential of someone like him and DeJuan Jones, my goodness, that's the type of tackles you have that could block out the sun. So those two guys I will start first. And we've seen this before where you go and get linemen, and especially in the draft that is considered not to be deep along the offensive line in terms of high-end talent. So why not use those high leverage first round picks to grab two of the best at the position right now. And then you can, you know, do the draft like you did last year and find good talent the rest of the way. But if you can get two elite talents at the point of attack, if I'm the Browns, those two guys are who I'm going for right out of the gate.
Has Stefanski earned a job in your department?
I will say this. As I've watched Stefanski, it has, first I was super critical in the summer. And then at some point, I'm sitting there like, it can't be Stefanski, right? It can't just be him. So I'm still up in the air on Stefanski, man, because at the end of the day, if you had to give up your offense twice to your play callers, well, what is it about the offense that gives you trepidation to where every quarterback that has left your organization has Flacco looks like a completely different player since he left the Browns. And everyone that has left this offense has played really well at that position. So I find it fascinating that the offense is the issue. If I could just have an offensive coordinator and let Stefanski just be the head coach, I'm cool with that. Cause I feel that's another one of my personal philosophies where I want to get back to where the head coach is the head coach. The offensive coordinator is the offensive coordinator. Only a very rare few can handle both. And if you can't handle both, if you're not one of those special guys like a Sean McVay, Just be the head coach and delegate responsibilities to your offensive and defensive coordinators.
All right, Emery, I like me some Harold Fannin Jr. I like me some Quinshon Judkins. I actually still think Wyatt Teller can play. I just think he's surrounded by not nearly enough. But how many offensive players are the Browns away? They're 32nd out of 32 offenses right now. How many offensive players are they away from even being like the 16th or 17th best offense in the NFL?
Not far, man. I'd say like two. You know, if you could just solidify the offensive line, they've been banged up. So the thing that people don't discuss enough about with the offensive line is like the secondary. Continuity is king, which means communication is paramount. And if you're constantly switching guys around, they can't communicate because everybody's speaking a different language. You want to have everyone grow the same, speaking the same language, doing the same things, and that time on task together, both verbally and physically, creates the offensive line cohesiveness to help, you know, your offense go. The Browns had a fantastic draft with what they were able to do in the running game with Fannin, and also I'm a big fan of Isaiah Bond. He just didn't have the full offseason to really work himself into game shape. So they've done the right things. They're not that far off. Maybe another receiver, a big dog out there on the perimeter with somebody that can really work the middle of the field and also stress the middle of the field. But they're fine. I just think that they need another lineman and also one of these big dogs at receiver. There's enough on that roster right now to be competent offensively.
Emery, it's always great to talk with you, man. Not only are you knowledgeable, but you always got great energy. We appreciate you, buddy. I'm sure we'll be talking with you not just the rest of the season, but certainly going into the next draft as well.
Appreciate you guys. Always a pleasure, man. Glad I was able to help you guys out. And again, you guys are on the radio out there in Cleveland. Let's make this deep Podesta role happen. I'm available.
Hey, you listen, it benefits you, it benefits us. That's what we're about here. Emery Hunt there, CBS Sports HQ, and the owner of Football Game Plan on the Fan Hotline.
Chris Rose, our buddy from the NFL Network, Browns preseason television, John Boy Media, joining us right now on the Fan Hotline after we play the Miami fight song to welcome Chris in. Hi, Chris. How are you, bud?
Good to hear from you, Chris.
Hi, guys.
How are you today? Everything good? 2-8, 2-8. I can't wait. And I mean that sincerely for Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited, I suppose. It's. I got a couple of brothers who were just happening to fly in for that game regardless.
And nice.
Since they live on the West Coast. And, you know, two of my nephews are going to their first ever NFL game. So to say they were there for this, good for them. I think, you know, there's a lot of curiosity. I would say behind Baker's first start and probably Tim Couch's, it's the third most anticipated for any Browns quarterback, you know, since we came back in the league, I would say. And nationally, it's more significant than that.
As a Browns fan, Chris, what are your expectations for Shedeur Sanders in a start?
I mean, I don't know if I have any expectations. I hope he plays well. I want to see that. I've told you guys since day one, I have seen these two very differently than a lot of people do. I don't think either of them are our starting quarterback of the future. I think one of them could be our starter next year, depending on how the whole evaluation of the current college crop goes. That doesn't mean that I necessarily think they're the future of the Browns. I think those are two totally different things.
I would agree with you.
And I definitely felt different when I was watching him play last week. I didn't feel like the field was as truncated as it's been with Dylan Gabriel. There were also, you know, the concerns that you had when you watched Shedeur in college about his default mechanism is backpedaling, which does not work in this league. Is that something that can be fixed? I think we're all curious about that and all that sort of stuff. But there is a different energy level I get when I watch him. That's just the way I feel.
I agree with you on that as well, because you think, all right, can he make something out of this? Can we see? I'm curious. We talked about this extensively early on. You have 2-8 against 2-8. Chris, I would never root for a team to lose a football game. But both of these teams need quarterbacks. who knows if next year is the year to get one in the draft, depending on who all comes out and everything else. But it's going to be weird to me to watch this and think the team that wins the game might not be the team that's positioned themselves better moving forward. And I hate to even think that way, but I'm kind of thinking that way going in. Is there validity to that, or should I ignore that?
I don't know. That happens. That happens all the time.
I know. I mean, I hate it, but right, it's right, reality.
The Houston Texans were going to fire Lovie Smith. He ends up winning his last game of the year. They end up moving from 1 to 2, and the Carolina Panthers end up trading up for Bryce Young, and the Texans get C.J. Stroud, who obviously has struggled a bit this year with his play and his health, actually the last year plus. But he had a sensational rookie year. So, I mean, all that stuff, I get it. I understand why, because we all think that way as fans, but it doesn't always work out that way. So be careful what you root for.
Chris Rose joining us on the Fan Hotline. Chris, Alex Wright got a 3-year, $33 million contract today. What do you think of that?
Good. I've been clamoring for that. I'm a big Alex Wright guy. I think his development from where he was, you know, day one when he walked into the Browns facility from UAB to where he is now is a substantial difference. And I think it's hard to find guys like that. And meaning that, like, yes, you could use a high draft pick on somebody to pair opposite Miles, right? We were talking about, do we go with Abdul Carter at 2 or not? Like, I understood that whole philosophy. I think that he can be part of a pass rush that and a defensive line for a while that can continue to wreak havoc at a high level. And it means that you don't have to spend a draft pick, whether that is a second first rounder or a top of the second round on a guy you can pair with Miles. I like the move personally. I know some people have been saying, well, it's such a Cleveland move. I actually think that it's a good move. I don't have any qualms about it.
Does it say anything about where the organization might be moving forward? And I mean, front office, that you sign a player here in midseason when you're 2-8 and there's some question about, okay, is this guy Andrew Berry? Is he back next year? Is he not back? Is the coaching staff back? And you allow him to go out and sign guys. I like it, but I wonder, does it send any other message other than that?
No, because I think that's an organizational decision. I think the Haslams probably had to sign off on it, and they probably know exactly what, you know, Wright means to the organization and how much he's improved and that his best football's ahead of him. I never have a problem with extending a guy who's in his mid-20s where I feel like he's an ascending player. I mean, to me, it's a smart move. So whether Andrew Berry gets to continue to be the one that makes the picks and makes the signings in free agency or not, I don't think it has much to do with today. I think some people will read into it. I won't.
I like the move too. 25 years old. I think he's done a nice job. I think it's his best year. And he's been around so long, Chris, that you kind of forget that he's only 25, but he was, what, 21 when he first showed up here. So good for him. Good for the Browns. I want to mention something to you that one of our guests early in the show said, Nick Costos, who does some stuff on Odyssey for us. And Nick said, and Nick's not a Browns fan. He looks at things from a different perspective than us. He said this season, twofold, smashing success for the Browns because of the play of the rookies and building to move forward, and agreeing with you and I think with me that the quarterback of the future is not on this team. Smashing success. Can a Browns fan wrap his head around that and think yes when they're 2-8?
No, but it also means that we have several less spots that we need to
concern ourselves with.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I think that that's a good thing. And, you know, we don't have to find a number one tight end. If we move on from Njoku, we don't have to find a running back, a number one running back. we don't have to find a linebacker to put in the middle of a defense. Like, those are all taken care of. There are other spots. I can't call it a smashing success because we're going to have to replace minimum of 60% of our offensive line, I would say, depending on what happens with a Wyatt Teller if he comes back, or a DeJuan Jones if he's healthy enough, all that sort of stuff. I can't call it a smashing success. I didn't expect to find our quarterback this year. We've been over that umpteen times. So that would be a smashing success. We have not hit that stage yet.
Chris, I'm going to ask you a rough question. Oh, as good. A fan, what do you want to happen on Sunday? Just as a Browns fan, do you want to see them win this thing? Or would you not be heartbroken if they ended up coming up short?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. At this point, it doesn't matter. Like, I go both ways with it because I do check the draft standings. Like, I root for the Titans every week. I root for the Jets every week. I root for the Giants every week. It's a sickness.
You root against really the Jaguars every week?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do too.
That one's a no-brainer. Yep. I mean, that one, you know, they could go 1-16 and you'd be thrilled.
We would be, wouldn't we?
Because that way you don't have to root against your own team, exactly. Which sounds absolutely horrific. But we all do it. Every fan base does it when the season goes sideways, because you say, well, what's the difference if we win 4 games or 2 games? Like, you're still feeling the same amount of pain. But I feel for everybody in the organization, right? I do work for them. I have friends at work there. I feel for the players because they work extremely hard and they put their bodies on the line. And that is a hard thing, to ask them to put their bodies and their livelihood on the line and show very little for it. So I root for those guys to win because I want them to feel good as much as the fan base. And people will say, well, Chris, they get paid handsomely and all. Right? I got it. I understand it. Go watch an NFL game from the sidelines one time. You might feel a little differently next time.
It's such a different game on the sidelines, isn't it?
Yep, it is.
It's almost frightening on the sidelines.
Yep. It's a great, great sport. We all love it. It is a sacrifice what those guys are doing to their bodies.
Sure is.
And yes, they do get paid handsomely. Yes, there are a ton of rewards they get to reap. All I'm saying is that it's a challenging profession out of many of the professional sports out there.
Is my optimism over Cedric Tillman misplaced? I like him, Chris, and if he can stay healthy, I want to see what he can do, because I think he could be a really good NFL wide receiver.
Yeah, I think he can be a solid one. Yeah, he's the closest we've had to being a successful draft pick at that position. We have been abysmal on the offensive line and the wide receiver room. It's why our offensive line situation is where it is. I'm surprised that with as much good veteran play that has been in the middle of that line, that there was as much issue as we had last week. I mean, go watch Chase Daniels' breakdown on his YouTube channel. Go watch Kurt Warner's on his. You know, you're going to learn a lot about what transpired with Shador last week. And I'm not here to defend him or attack him. That's not like that. You guys know that's not my thing. I'm just kind of like, I didn't expect anything different than what we got last week. So whether you want to bitch and moan, it's because he didn't get a rep with the first team, which to me does feel ridiculous when you've got a rookie backing up a rookie. But once again, they're the first team since the 2012 Redskins that drafted 2 quarterbacks in the first 5 rounds. It has not happened in 13 years. So then when you not only do that, but then you trade away the 2 veterans, you have to kind of go off script. Like, we heard a lot of quarterbacks. Luke McCown put out a great social media post that, guys, I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to tell you what it's like when you're a mid-round pick. You don't get reps. And I don't think 2 or 3 reps at the end of a team session would have made any difference for Shador last week. I really don't. But I do think that the Browns kind of set themselves up to be second guessed throughout this thing because of the way they've gone through drafting two guys within a 3-round span, neither of whom were higher than late 3rd-round picks. They have set themselves up to be criticized. Plus, you throw in the history of at that position, they're going to take the shots. And some would say that it's warranted and all that sort of stuff. But all they can do is now deal with it moving forward. Shadur's going to get his full week of preparation here. He's going against a terrible team. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think there will be energy in the building. I don't think it's going to be perfect. I don't even know if it'll be great, but I'm excited to see it.
I am too. And then I'll be looking forward to watching you and Maurice Jones-Drew this week on Game Day Final on the NFL Network.
Sounds great.
You do a great job on that. I mention that every time you're with us. I really enjoy watching that show.
Best, I appreciate that
a lot.
It's
the
really
best
do.
Recap if you're looking for what happened on a Sunday in the NFL that you're going to find anywhere, anytime. Chris and whoever is filling in with him, but I really love it with MJD. He's really good.
Thank you. He'll be back there right after the Rams-Bucks on Sunday Night Football, so it'll be a ton of fun. We'll be talking to Shador, so make sure you tune in.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
Chris Rose joining us on the Fan Hotline.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.